everybody. This is Christina with On Request Magazine, and I have the pleasure today of speaking with one of the busiest actors, I think, right now, a man by the name of Brad Carter, who you will know currently from his role on Sons of Anarchy, but he's got a lot going on. How are you doing, Brad?
I am great. How are you?
I am fantastic. It's great to talk to you, and I can't tell you, I was pretty excited when I saw this come through my email, because I'm a fan of your work. I loved your work as Charlie Lang on True Detective. I thought that was such a great role.
Oh, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. And now on Sons of Anarchy, you know, I just hate you so much as...
That's good.
I know. See, so that's a testament to your work. And for those listening who may not know who I'm speaking of right off the bat, Brad plays Leland Groon, the probably scuzziest Aryan Nation drug dealer known to man, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, we just love to hate you, and you do such a great job at it. So how was that when you got that call to be part of this last season of this epic show?
It was great, you know, because I just thought I was not going to make it in on this one. I've been in for a few times in the past and come close to getting some really cool roles, but it just never worked out. And, you know, then, you know, when this came through finally, I was really excited about it. But then I was in Montreal shooting a TV show called Ascension, and so I was like, oh, damn it, I'm going to miss it again. And but in the end, it all worked out, you know, schedule-wise, and everyone worked really hard to make it happen, so I was really happy about that.
That's really great, and I'm sure seeing the intensity that you put out there on True Detective didn't hurt either on people wanting to work with you. I mean, what a great role that was.
You know, it's my favorite role that I've ever had because, I've worked a lot before then, but it was just such a special role, such a special show.
Oh, yeah.
When I read that, I knew, plus, I knew who was going to be in it, but when I read the pilot, I just knew it was going to be something different, and I really wanted to be part of it, and then once I finally got the role, it was just, you know, it was unreal to get to go work with those two guys, and... You know, and I got to be there during Mardi Gras in New Orleans, so that didn't hurt.
No kidding.
And I've never been there before, so that was just awesome. But, yeah, working with those two guys, I mean, two A-list actors, you know, the gravitas that was in that little room with me was just unbelievable. And, you know, it's one of those times when, you know, you better bring it.
Oh, absolutely. And you did. I mean, those interrogation scenes were some of my favorite, actually, of the whole series. I mean, and that says a lot, because what a great series it was, you know. So, yeah, I felt for your character. I did. Even though it wasn't the most likable character in one way, I really, you know, felt for you. And just being in that interrogation room with those two guys, wow. Yeah,
he was a character... I really wanted to come from a place of this is a guy who's more just victim of his circumstances and upbringing, and, you know, in my mind, I had a very specific place where he was born, where he was from, sort of the area he grew up in, and that helped kind of guide me so that he may not necessarily be the most terrible person, but he's more just kind of a dumbass in bad circumstances. You know what I mean? Like he was kind of a dumbass.
Yeah, he was. But you're right.
He thought he was smart.
He did, but he was. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was gonna say that, but that was my thinking. Was he would be very this is a guy that's in prison that tries to play a tough guy, but he's more of a dumbass than he lets on, and I think we see that vulnerability come through, you know, at the end of his second scene with those guys. At least that's what I was shooting for.
Well, I think you nailed it, because it did really remind me of any interrogation that you've ever seen on, let's say, a true crime show where, you know, they start out thinking they're a real badass, but in reality, they're probably the most terrified person in the room. So,
right.
Yeah,
right.
That's definitely what I got from it. And, you know, you mentioned him being a victim of his surroundings and upbringing, probably, and circumstance. Did you have anything to draw on from that? You know, I don't really know where necessarily you came from or how you got into acting, but, you know, could you relate at all to any of his circumstance?
I grew up in outside of Macon, Georgia.
Oh, okay.
And I you know, I knew many people in my area that were not necessarily like him, but, you know, could very easily have gone that way. You know, I grew up around a lot of, you know, there was a lot of white trash, a lot of rednecks, you know,
right.
Everywhere. You know, that's everywhere.
Sure.
But, you know, in the South,
you see a lot of it.
I think it's more prevalent. And it was just one of those things that I absolutely didn't have a problem drawing on memories of certain people. And, you know, I kind of cross-referenced that with my time in New Orleans. And I had already been there the month before to do the table read. And I kind of just walked around and tried to talk to people and meet people and sort of understand their vernacular, the way that they talk. And I didn't want that character to be from New Orleans. I was thinking he was more from, you know, maybe up north, like towards Arkansas, and, you know, grew up in sort of a ghetto, sort of a neighborhood area, and a white trash area, you know. And that's kind of how I was coming at it.
Well, the reason I asked that about your background is because you seem to be falling into these roles of similar character structure. And, you know, your role is Leland Groon. You know, he's got that same similar sort of, like you said, white trash sort of background. And then we'll talk about your role on Ascension, which I'm really interested to talk about. But you also play sort of a bad guy in that role as well. So, you know, you do seem to fit into that groove very nicely, although you seem like the nicest guy in the world.
You know, I made the joke before, but, you know, it's true. As my mom always, she's always says, why can't you play a nice boy? And I don't know. I always tell them, I have that faith, Mom, if people want to punch it or put it in prison or do something bad to it, kill it.
That's
I just
so
have
true.
That faith.
So
and,
true.
You know, when I just embraced that, and a long time ago when I was sort of trying to tool my acting career, I was like, no, I can try. You know, I wanted to do comedy, actually, when I moved here. And I actually do stand-up. And I thought, well, I'll be, you know, a comedian, I'll be on Saturday Night Live or something like that. And then, you know, I realized that I had a much higher chance of going in and just trying to get small roles that I knew that they had to fill, you know, especially on procedural shows where they have to, you know, they have so many co-stars and guest stars in one episode. And I thought, well, let me just try to put my best foot forward as a bad guy or as a perp or as a drug dealer or something to just sort of get my foot in the door. And that is kind of how that happened. I in my acting class, I told my teacher, you know, I only want to practice bad guys and rednecks and things of that nature that I know I can go in and nail immediately. You know, instead of trying to go in for the one, you know, common guest star on some famous show where they're only going to hire Brad Pitt or Sean Penn or something, you know?
Right,
like,
yeah.
You know,
I got you.
Star, you know, like on Friends, you know, they, at the end, you know, they were having, like, Tom Selleck, like, people with their guest stars. It's like, you know, I can't compete with that.
Well, you know, it's funny because when you mentioned, and I read that you were a comedy writer and whatnot, and you mentioned doing stand-up. I mean, that's ruined now, because can you imagine people out there looking at, like, Leland Groon up there trying to make you laugh? That's just...
Well, first of all, funny is people generally don't recognize me. Usually I'm kind of a bit of a shapeshifter.
Yeah.
As far as just whatever my facial hair is doing at the moment. And so I get looks a lot, like, wherever I go, I get looks. I know people are thinking, how do I know that guy? But it's because I already look really different from whatever they've watched.
Right.
And I kind of like that. It's kind of fun for me to just sort of always be different. I mean, on one hand, you know, you'd like to be known as, hey, there's that guy again. But on the other hand, it's kind of fun to be like, hey, there's that guy again.
Yeah, right. Like,
I think, you know what I mean? So,
it's like they...
It's been fun for me.
They don't know if they've seen you on a wanted poster or,
right?
They're like, did I see him on a show or is he on America's Next Most Wanted? What's going on?
That's right. So, you know, and I used to die a lot of the characters I played. I mean, I could make a reel just off of my deaths. But, you know, one of the other jokes in my family is, well, you know, what do you die on? You know, I tell my book something, I'll say, oh, when you die. You know, it's like, they don't want to get too invested in me because they know I'm just going to die.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's kind of fun of getting, you know, as you move up in your career, you get to know, what happens is those deaths either start being way better and way more grandiose and way better characters, or if you don't die, which is the goal, because, you know, you want to be able to come back.
Right, right.
And so, you know, there's no money in dying.
No.
So, to make a living, you know, the goal is to not die. So, that's where I'm at right now, is I'm getting these great roles that are these bad guys, and they don't necessarily die. You know, they can return and recur, and if they do die, it's a good enough character that I don't mind, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It's worth it. It's worth the pain of the death scene.
Absolutely. And Leland has not died on Sons of Anarchy. Now, I can't say what's going to happen in the future. But just remember we had this conversation next time you see Leland.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I will tell you this. I can't think of any episode that he's been in that I didn't want him to die. But now that I'm speaking to you, I'm hoping that he holds on a little bit longer just for your sake. You know, I have to take, you know, that personal feeling out of it because, I mean, there have been times where I've said, I better not be driving down in L.A. and see him on the street because I'm going to have to control myself. He's just that unlikable of a character, so congrats on that. But let's talk about your next unlikable character. I don't know because I haven't seen him in action, but from what I've read, it just seems like you're going to be one of those impulsive, you know, could go off at any moment kind of characters on Ascension, which... For those who don't know, Ascension is going to be a sci-fi miniseries that's going to be coming out in December, right?
Yeah, December 15th, 16th, and 17th. We're going to play all six episodes as three episodes. So they're going to be two-hour episodes a night, and you're going to be able to binge-watch them three nights in a row. So that's kind of their thinking in the age of Netflix, and everyone can just binge-watch, you know.
Right.
Breaking Bad, you know, so that's kind of what this is going to be like, and as a beautiful introductory to our world, and you know, and if people respond to it like we're hoping they do, then we will, you know, go forward and talk about making more episodes and making it a series, which is of course my hope.
That's what I was going to ask you. Yeah, it looks like it has such great potential to be a series, and so when I saw a miniseries, I thought, wow, you know, this could really be something that was ongoing. So, could you tell our listeners a little bit about it?
Absolutely. It's the thing I'm the most excited about because, you know, we're talking about all these characters I do, and this character is unlike anything I've ever got to play. And I'm so grateful for this character because it's, he starts out, he's a butcher, I mean, John Stokes, and, departure on a ship called Ascension. Let me give you a little background about Ascension. Ascension is a ship that was launched in 1963. And with the premise being, Kennedy was very worried about the Cold War and about, you know, nuclear annihilation of the human race. And so with the technology that they had at the time, secretly they put together this ship called Ascension that's bigger than the Empire State Building. It's 80 levels, and 600 people volunteered, and of course they had 70 of the best and the brightest scientists in the world, and they shot them into space towards planet Proxima to ensure the, you know, to ensure that the human race would go on in case, you know, the worst happened here. And so it's actually based on it's actually the story. Philip Levins has written this based on his knowledge of something called the Orion Project, which was a real thing that was going on in the 60s. Real experiments, real, you know, they basically were trying to figure out how could interstellar travel be attained, you know. And they were like, if we put a nuclear bomb on the end of a ship, it will propel it through space. If they go off, you know, and there's a protective plate between them and the ship, and it will push the ship forward.
Right.
And that is still considered the best way to do it even today.
Wow.
And so it's based on some very real science. And that's what I love about it. He didn't just make this up. It's based on some very real possible science that could have happened. And so now you have, 51 years later, you have these people in space that have not talked to anyone on Earth, have had no contact with Earth since 1963. And so if you think about it like a traveling time capsule, everything in the ship is still the 60s. Everything, you know, they listen to records and they watch reel-to-reels, and, you know,
wow,
John Wayne movies, and, you know, that's what they have. And, you know, they have their books, and they have, you know, but they've also created technology. Because remember, we have some of the brightest scientists on board the ship. And so they've created some new technologies, and they've made their own world. And so inside this ship, you have an entire hierarchy from, you know, from the upper levels to the lower decks. The lower decks are all your workers, all your people that are making the ship go, you know, the people that are, you know, just think of it like Titanic.
Right.
Where, you know, up top you had your elite and your captains and your cigar smokers, and, you know, as you went further and further down, you had your, you know, people that you treat like rats.
Right, right.
And so that's kind of what's going on in our world, in our small world, and what's happening is people, you know, even though 600 people volunteered 51 years ago, their children and their grandchildren did not, and they're not happy about it, a lot of them.
Yeah.
And they're not happy about having no say in their future, and being trapped on this ship and seeing everything they're ever going to see and knowing everyone they're ever going to know. And so what kind of struggles does that create? You know, that's what we're going to find out. And it's just really awesome how it's put together. I mean, I can't say enough good things about this show. I play a character named John Stokes, who's a butcher and a stockyard master. We have one whole floor is just livestock, and I'm in charge of that, and basically the character, you know, is one of those that's really unhappy with his station in life, and what he does with that, we're gonna find out.
Ah, interesting. I hear sort of like a revolution starting before I've even watched the show, and that would be really exciting.
Absolutely, and I want to say, just, you know, just when you think you know what this show is about, is when you don't know.
That's so exciting.
That's what's so exciting about it. There's absolutely twists and turns that are going to make your jaw drop.
I'm excited. Gosh, I wish it wasn't all the way in December. I'm looking forward to seeing
Me
it.
Too.
Oh my gosh! Now I'm stoked about it, Mr. Stokes.
Me too. And we've got Trisha Helfer on there. She was on Battlestar Galactica. And, you know, she's a huge, you know, sci-fi fan. fans will know her.
Oh, yeah.
Well, we've got Brian Van Holt as the captain. We've got Andrea Roth. She was on Rescue Me. We have Gil Bellows. He's a wonderful actor. We have a lot of newcomers as well that people are going to grow and love. Yeah. And I'm very, very, very excited about it. I mean, and I've done a lot of cool things this year. I mean, I've worked with Johnny Depp this year, and a film called Black Mass, and this is, I'm still way more excited about it.
Well, that does say a lot for sure. I mean, and I wanted to ask you about these movies you have coming up too, but I'm going to say that I'm going to also include the trailer for Ascension when we do this feature. I think it's going to be such a great show, and I'm really hoping, for everybody's sake, that it continues on to be a full-on series, because what a great premise.
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to say, fingers crossed, and everybody listening, please, go support it and get on the Facebook. They have a page, and get on the Twitter if you're on there, and talk about it and get people excited about it. And I will love you forever.
Exactly, people. Hashtag Ascension. We're going to start doing that and following through. The social media is a great way to keep shows going these days, so everyone get on board. So let me ask you, you have three other roles coming out in features that you're playing alongside of some pretty heavy hitters. Do you want to tell us about that?
I just got back from, earlier this year, I did the Johnny Depp film called Black Mass, and it's about Whitey Bulger, and the Irish Mafia in the 70s, 80s, and 90s in South Boston, based on a true story and directed by Scott Cooper. And it is going to be a badass movie. It's going to be very realistic, and it's all based on firsthand accounts from the guy that was Whitey's muscle.
Wow.
And Johnny plays Whitey, and he does it, really well. He's full prosthetic. I mean, all you got to do is Google, Johnny Depp, Whitey Bulger, and you'll find, everybody in Boston was excited to see him, so everybody was taking photos of him on set. So, unfortunately, I kind of wish that it wasn't out there, so I'd be really surprised.
Right.
But you'll totally see, he really took on this character, and total prosthetics, and he looks like the guy.
Wow.
And, and I'm playing one of the guys that was in his gang, and that they eventually murdered and tortured. And this one takes the cake, let's just say that.
Wow, okay. I'm looking forward to that. Unfortunately for
and
you.
And that will be out in August of next year.
Okay, great.
So gotta wait on that one. But also, I just worked on The Revenant, which is Leo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy movie.
Nice.
Based on the true story of Hugh Glass. And he was a trapper in the 1830s, and very excited about that one. And then I also just worked on an indie film, which I love indie films. I just got to work on something called Dixieland, and we shot that in Mississippi, and starring alongside Faith Hill.
Oh, nice.
Who's amazing, who's absolutely amazing in this as a trailer park mom. And it's like you've never seen Faith Hill before.
Really?
And absolutely. And I play a strip club owner, and I got to get in a hot tub with Faith Hill. So,
look at you.
How many people can say that?
Not a lot. That's pretty remarkable. And bravo.
Yeah, thank you. Me and Tim McGraw.
You and Tim McGraw, right. Nice company.
And, that one's going to be really an interesting movie. It's got Riley Keough, who's the grand daughter of Elvis.
Oh, wow.
And she's a wonderful little actress, and she stars in it along with Chris Silka, who's going to be playing Venom in Spider-Man 3.
Wow.
Coming out soon.
You're
keeping
some good company there, Brad.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Oh, and RJ Mitty is in this one as well. So RJ Mitty played Walter White Jr. on Breaking Bad.
Love him.
That was fun because I'm a huge Breaking Bad fan.
Me too. And, I've got to say, you would have been great as somebody on Breaking Bad. You would have fit right in there as...
Oh, don't even get me started. Don't get me started. But it ain't for lack of trying. I'll tell you that. I just wrong place, wrong time for that show.
Exactly. Well, let's just say Better Call Saul. That's all I'm saying. You know, that's still out there. So you heard it here first. No, I'm kidding, but I'm not. I had two other things I wanted to throw at you, but I don't know how you're doing on time.
Well, we're getting close, but let's just try to slam them in there. What do you got?
Okay, I wanted to talk about your surgery. I did not know that you underwent this surgery for essential tremor, and that really interested me because I have a friend who just went through the same surgery. So,
DBS?
Yes, exactly. And
that's amazing.
He documented it and the whole thing, and it, you know, I found it really intriguing. I have a medical background myself, so tell me about this, because you had this filmed and you also had your guitar sitting there with you, and how did this all pan out for you? I mean, I know this is a pretty big thing to go through, but also can work wonders. So how are you doing now?
Well, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. And, I'm having the best year of my life because my confidence is back. My, my self-esteem is back where it should be, because hiding this condition can get really overwhelming.
Right.
And really, especially when you work with your hand as much as I do, and when you're a guitarist like I've been for 25 years, and when you're an actor, you know, it's hard to hide it on set. And it got harder and harder for me. You know, I'm working on my ninth year of having this. And, for those that don't know, essential tremor is just the most common movement disorder in the world. And it's, but it can vary from just a nuisance. You know, like you see people that sort of look like they had too much coffee. And people say, oh, well, they're just old.
Right.
Or, it can be absolutely debilitating to the point of, I can't feed myself, I can't drink, I can't button my shirt.
Right.
And, so that's about 30% of the population with essential tremor go through that. So I was quickly headed towards that guy. And make no mistake, this is not a cure.
No.
But it is it absolutely can help mask the condition, and they can try to, with a little computer that they have that connects to a computer in my chest, sort of like a pacemaker, they can try to keep up with it, try to keep tweaking it so that, I'm better than I would be had I not had it.
Right.
And that's all I was hoping for. And, the first surgery that got so famous, I'm getting in my car now, driving here. So if you Google guy plays guitar during brain surgery, if your listeners want to just Google that, you'll find over 20 million articles about me.
Wow.
That's a crazy number.
It is.
Because it went viral, and it went to literally every news organization in the world decided to pick it up. And from CNN to the smallest, YouTube news, it's on there. And it was one of those things where I never dreamed that it would be, that my personal life would just be out there like that. And I knew that they were going to film it, and I knew that they were going to, and that morning, I knew that they were going to Twitter it live and put it on Vine, but I thought, well, only doctors are really ever going to see this, or people that are interested in having deep brain stimulation, and I thought that, if it could help them, then that's great. And I never thought that anyone would actually be so interested as for it to go viral. And I mean, it's something like 800 million views at this point, cumulatively.
Jeez.
I know that if just that day alone, it was something like 60 million.
Wow. I mean, funny thing is, I'm sure I saw it on my Facebook feed. It's one of those things where, you see all these videos that pop up, and you might click them one day and you might not. And I remember seeing it, but had no idea it was you, So when I got this email and I saw that, I was like, oh my gosh, that was Brad. I mean, that's crazy. And then the fact that my friend went through it, I mean, he had a couple of complications afterwards, but he's doing much better, and so that's why I was, really wanting to know how you did, and I think it's great that you put it out there,
it's great to hear. You know, I'm always excited to hear that someone else did it and that it's helping them, and because the technology is out there and it, you know, it's way more prevalent than it was, and it can help people, and you know, people either don't know about it or they're scared of it or they're afraid of having to be awake during their brain surgery, and all I can say is, you know, if you have, you know, Parkinson's, essential tremor, dystonia, any, you know, and by the way, there's other things that they're finding deep brain stimulation helps now, even deep depression.
Wow.
You know, why not utilize the technology and let it help you? And that's where I was. I was at the end of my rope, and, you know, how am I going to keep making a living? How am I going to be, you know, how am I going to continue like this? And so I jumped at the chance to have the surgery, you know, and after you qualify, you know, you have to take a lot of medications, you have to go through, a good couple of years of, you know, qualifying for this. And, you know, once I did, I never looked back, and it was scary, yeah, but it was scarier to me to live with this and let it get worse before I've done all the things I want to do.
Right. Well,
that surgery actually didn't. It actually wasn't as successful as we hoped it would be, and I actually had to go do it again 4 months later, last September of 2013. So I had two brain surgeries within 4 months of each other, and it was a heavy, heavy year last year.
I can imagine. I mean, as somebody who I live with an illness every day myself, and you know, I have rheumatoid arthritis. If there was,
my mother has that.
So if there was something that they could do like that would stop the way that I have to live my life every day, I would jump on it. So I completely understand where you're at, and again, I think it's great that you're having such a good year, and it sounds like you're going to be having a very good 2015 too. You've got an album coming out, right?
Absolutely. No. My favorite thing, I'm glad you brought it up. My favorite thing is that I'm getting to record a record, which is something I always wanted to do and never had the money to do. And as my hands got worse, I, you know, sort of put it on the back burner because I was always like, well, let me find the cure and figure out what's wrong with me, and then I'll record my music, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you wake up one day and you're like, oh, I can't record my music because this has gotten too bad.
Yeah, yeah.
A cure ain't coming, and now I'm in trouble.
Yeah.
And so I decided to do a Kickstarter last year and just come hell or high water, make this record so that I can record my original music for posterity for a day that I can't play it. And, you know, it's been awesome. I've been working on it as I can this year, you know, when I'm not out of town and not working. I've been in Canada a lot working on extension and other things, but absolutely, and if you go to my website at www.bradcarter.me or bradcartermusic.com, you can actually pre-order my record.
Oh, great.
And I just have a little PayPal there, and you can pre-order it, and I've got a ton of them. I'm really excited that people are excited to hear my music, and you can hear clips. If you go to Brad Carter Music, you can hear the clips. Like, you can actually see me working on the record, sort of get a taste of how it's going to sound. And I'm really, really excited about it. My goal is to be able to go out and perform for as long as I can while I can.
Absolutely. Oh, I absolutely know what you mean. And just so you know, we were originally only a music magazine. We've branched out tremendously over the years. So we still cover music as well. And we will definitely not only do a review of the record when it comes out, but hopefully talk to you again when the record hits. And we'll put those links up for you so people can check out your music as well. We would love to help promote it.
Absolutely. I would love to come back and talk about the record when it's done. And until then, you know, you can keep up with me at Twitter. My Twitter handle is @TheBradCarter. And I also have a Facebook. It's just a Facebook/Brad Carter fan page.
All right. Great.
And, yeah.
We'll put all that out there. and our listeners can hear it right now. And, you know, I know that I've kept you over.
That's okay.
Could probably talk all day here, but I'm going to take us out of the interview with something I do with everyone, if you're up for it. You can take us out by asking me the last question, and you can ask me anything at all that you want.
What is your favorite kind of dog?
Oh, wow. Good question. I'm an absolute dog lover. I love golden retrievers. I have two. I've had four in my life, and my absolute love of my life is my golden retriever, Jack, or Jackson is his full name. So, yeah, he's my boy through and through. He loves me to death. I love him, and they're the best dogs, so loyal to a fault.
So yeah, they are loyal. I have a pit bull mix. He's mixed with basset hound. I have a chihuahua / terrier. He's albino, and they're both rescues, and they're both my life.
I love rescues.
And I have a cat named Dalma.
Awesome. I have a cat too, and I have two rescues. I have a total of six dogs. So, yeah, I'm always the one. If there's a dog wandering the street, you know, they're going to find me. That's kind of the family saying. So, yeah, I'm with you. Congratulations on your rescues. That's awesome. They sound like interesting mixes for sure.
Yeah, I love them. They help keep me company, keep me sane.
Me too. Well, I know you got to go, Brad. Thank you so much for our conversation, and good luck with everything. And I'm going to keep my fingers crossed for Ascension to become a full-fledged series. And, you know, thanks again. Good luck.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
To you, too. Have a good day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.